Change is inevitable. And this year has certainly been a year of change for this congregation. Whatever your feelings about what is happening at this time and in this manner, October is going to hold a lot more change for us than just the colors of the leaves. Over the past few months, we've attended congregational meetings and services that have made an effort to assure us that we're on the right path. Today, I'm going to share some stories about other groups that are on the right path too. Groups that have been faced with changing times and have evolved to meet the challenge. Slide. One of my favorite feel-good stories of how a community came together to evolve and change begins with this old condemned building in downtown Toronto. In the 1970s, the building was slated for demolition, but the community rallied together, blocked the demolition, and fought City Hall to make it a community space. Over the 50 years that followed, the 519 Church Street Community Center became a revolutionary home of programs, services, and social gatherings for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirited groups, for refugees and newcomers, people with disabilities, people who struggle with mental health, people living in poverty, and the list goes on. Over those 50 years, they also had an elevator installed and added an addition at the side of the building. Knowing how busy that building is now and what a great service it provides for the community, it's hard to believe that it was once an old condemned building slated for demolition. I found some interesting information about companies that have evolved by reinventing themselves. IBM had once been one of the world's top manufacturers of business machines, computer equipment, and mainframes. But in the early 1990s, they began facing some steep competition. In 1993, the company posted a staggering $8 billion loss in just one quarter. To turn the company around, executives made the bold decision to step away from their main product, hardware. And instead, IBM would focus on software, consulting services, and computing research. And this move brought the company back to profitability and improved its reputation. YouTube, which has been a great resource for music for our online services, started out in 2005 as a video dating site, and it struggled. They were actually paying people $20 to upload videos of themselves for their dating profiles, and it still wasn't working. So at some point, they basically handed it over to the public and allowed people to have a go and upload whatever video they wanted for free. And now it's the household name that it is. In the 1930s, there was a company that manufactured a soft clay-like cleaning product that was used for safely removing coal residue from wallpaper. Throughout the 1950s, oil and gas furnaces were becoming more popular than coal, and their business suffered. They either had to go out of business or reinvent themselves. So they took their product, added some color, changed their marketing, and the business became more successful than ever, producing a product that we know as Play-Doh. Just as people don't need to clean coal soot from their paintings and wallpaper anymore, some people don't need church anymore either. Belonging to a church isn't necessarily something people need to do. So it has to become something that people want to do. Maybe something colorful and fun, like Play-Doh. The United Church of Canada is closing dozens of churches each year. But I'm in the mood for success stories. This first one is near where I grew up in an agricultural area northwest of Toronto. If you know the area, Norval is a small town situated in between Brampton and Georgetown. The Norval United Church congregation began meeting back in 1850, and the church built in 1889 still stands today. Many of the congregation have been farmers, and just as the farms are passed down from one generation to the next, multiple generations of the same families have congregated in that same church for 130 years. Somehow in the 1990s, when some churches were beginning to dwindle, Norval was thriving. This could have been in part due to the sprawl of the Greater Toronto area, which brought more subdivisions closer to Norval. And it also could have been due to the wonderful minister they hired around that same time. And that minister is still with the congregation some 25 years later. Every Sunday was a full house. And outside of Sunday, the building was busy operating programs, not just for the congregation, but for the community. Norval United became a community center. The church bought two houses next door for additional space for all of their programs, and aware that they were still growing, and also aware that the old church was full of stairs, they started planning for the future. One family donated 5 acres of their farm in 2006, and 13 years later, they moved into their huge new church built on that land in 2019. That's a picture of phase one, 15,000 square feet, with a sanctuary that seats 400, a gymnasium, a chapel, and a kitchen. Phase two, that hasn't been built yet, we'll have a banquet hall and meeting space to be used by the community outside of the congregation. And then plans for phase three include affordable housing for seniors. They didn't just build a church, they built a community. Now that's a very nice story for a church that is filled to capacity and has a budget of a few million dollars, but that's not necessarily easy for us to relate to. I came across this article a couple of years ago, and I've shared it with the board and a few others around at that time. It's about a dying church that reinvented itself. This is Toronto's Roncesvalles United Church, built in 1928. By 2013, they were a small congregation that couldn't keep up with the maintenance required on their big old building. And they were faced with the decision to sell their church and either close or amalgamate. People weren't coming to church anymore. But instead, they got creative and opened their doors to the community outside of the congregation. There are now yoga and dance and Pilates classes. Mental health and wellness practitioners have set up office in the old Sunday school. There's art and theater programs for kids. Every tenant there pays much less rent than they would pay anywhere else. And in turn, they also have to provide some low fee or pay what you can spaces in their programs to the community. There are also some groups who use the space absolutely free, and they offer meals for people in the community who struggle financially. Sounds good, eh? But has their membership increased? And has their attendance on Sunday mornings increased? Actually, no. They only have 40 members, but even though they don't charge much for rent, they have been able to afford some long-ignored repairs to their building and made parts of the building wheelchair accessible, and they have a full-time minister. In the interview, Reverend Ann Hines said, "The tenants here are not paying us to allow us to do our mission. They are our mission." Sunday morning is no longer their main product. In 2019, they received over $200,000 in donations. There are generous people out there, and just because they might not need to sit in church on Sunday morning, they obviously don't mind contributing when they see the good work that a church can do for the community. About a month ago, someone had asked me for a copy of our 2017 strategic plan, a document that I hadn't looked at in years. And when I did, I noticed that there was a goal area to make our building available for the community. I wonder if we missed an opportunity to focus on that, because perhaps we were more occupied with moving to an accessible space. Oh, I might have put slides in the wrong order. Sorry. Last Sunday, Margaret casually mentioned to us that Toronto's Neighborhood Unitarian Congregation has recently moved to a space to share with other religious groups. So I had to look it up. And coincidentally, they're now located in the area where I used to live and work. If you know Toronto, they're at Eastminster United, Danforth and Jackman near Chester Station and the Carrick Common. It's a big old church with some rooms that have been made wheelchair accessible, but the surrounding neighborhood has a progressive environmental and social conscience near great independent shops, holistic health and wellness clinics. That neighborhood is one of Toronto's equivalents of Bay and Algoma, actually. And I think Neighborhood Unitarian will do well there. Margaret also mentioned that the first Unitarian congregation in Toronto had purchased an old fire hall to become their new church. And I recall reading something earlier on their website that led me to believe that they actually sold their current church a while ago, but made an arrangement with the new owner so that they could become a tenant and rent their building. Even in the pandemic, when they couldn't gather in the building, they would still have their home. And while they continued to search for their next home. Well, that sounds wise. And I think Margaret said that they have been actively planning toward this move for 14 years. It's a lot of years of discussion and planning, and it led to them having a unanimous vote to purchase their next home. That earlier evolution that I mentioned of the Norville United Church took 13 years from the time that the land was given to them until the grand opening of their new church, phase one. And I'm sure that there was at least a couple of years of discussions that took prior to the gift of that acreage. So probably 15 years of meetings, discussions, planning, consulting, budgeting, more discussions, fundraising, drafting, more planning, more consulting, more budgeting. Meanwhile, the congregation had some 15 years to prepare to move on from that building that had been the life of many generations of the same family. And that original church, built in 1889, is now the spiritual gathering space for a Syrian Orthodox congregation. Well, that doesn't sound too bad. The old building gets a new life for a new community. It's kind of sweet. The congregation knew for years that the move was coming, and they knew that they were going to move to something better. They had evolved. There was momentum of growth and expansion that propelled them to where they needed to go next. We can resume the share. When I was at our board retreat, Sandra had shared a good little analogy that she had received from Joan Carolyn, our congregational life lead. To envision a trapeze artist, and as they swing, there's a point in that transition where they need to let go before taking hold of what's next. Now, I love a good analogy, and this is a beautiful one. But I thought about it more and even discussed it with a friend. Being a trapeze artist is not as easy as it looks. If I tried it with the strength and skills that I currently have, I wouldn't last 1 second. And for a beginner to get it right requires the guidance of a professional coach. It also requires a destination and momentum to get there. Having a precise destination in sight is crucial. Otherwise, you're just trying to grab on to anything to prevent a fall. And if you don't take the time to work to build up that momentum before letting go, you might not make it. I'm worried. And I'm not the only one worried. I don't know if we have enough oomph to get to wherever it is we're going. But if there was ever a time, then we need that drive more. The time is now. Stop share. The process of selling our spiritual home here at Algoma has happened quickly for some of us, and not quick enough for others. It is a risk. It could have been a risk to stay. It's certainly a risk to move at this pace, but it's a risk that the majority of our membership was comfortable with. I guess the risk is uncomfortable for some of us because our society always warns us to be cautious. When we're visiting people from far away and we leave, they give us a farewell wish, like, drive safe, have a safe flight, take care. We don't often hear our loved ones say, take risks. Hope your flight keeps you on the edge of your seat like a roller coaster. Drive with reckless abandon. Now, earlier this year, at the annual congregational meeting of the Canadian Unitarian Council, there was a spontaneous motion from the floor to adopt an eighth principle demonstrating our commitment to anti-racism. Now, how could any compassionate Unitarian vote against such a motion? Well, 1/3 of the delegates voted against the anti-racism principle. Are they racist? Do they not value equality? That's not it at all. Even though a dismantling racism group had been studying this and spent years preparing for this proposed principle, there was still more discussions to be had at the congregational level. Adding another principle is a pretty big deal after all, and not something to commit to impulsively. Similarly, our congregation has experienced some opposition to selling our home here at Algoma. This doesn't mean that people in our midst are opposed to accessibility. We're not discriminating against people who struggle with stairs. We're opposed to the process, believing that there was much more research, investigating, planning, and consulting with third-party experts to be done before committing to something impulsively. Originally, I was preparing a talk for today to recognize that we've been through a lot this year, but also to try and understand where our strong opinions on one side or the other stem from, and to help us all come together on the same friendly path again. Last week, David Tranter mentioned toxic positivity, which is something that my mother has perfected, and I catch myself falling into that pattern too. Even though I know I should know better, I want to be a peacekeeper. But for fear of invading people with toxic positivity, I put those pages aside. Maybe there will be a better time for that, but I don't think the time is now. We have all been emotionally involved in this process. Whether in favor of leaving or not, we've all let our emotions get the best of us at some point. So I'm not going to expect anyone, including myself, to feel differently than they do. I'm not going to point out positives today. Just be where you're at. Whatever you're feeling, that feeling is genuine and real and valid. And if you're anxious because we have 4 weeks to be out of this building and we still don't know what happens next, then be anxious. And if you're angry because this process took 13 months instead of 13 years, be angry. If you feel insignificant because you don't have the technology to go on Zoom while so many important decisions have been made without you, then be with those feelings. If you feel cheated because you didn't know about or couldn't participate in the meeting to sell Algoma, yet you received a phone invitation and opportunity to participate in last week's in-gathering in person, then honor those feelings. If you feel discriminated against because you experience pain and exhaustion when trying to go up and down stairs, then you should feel discriminated against. If you're appalled that we never even investigated the feasibility of a wheelchair lift for the back entrance with a barrier-free washroom, then be appalled. If you are livid that some of the members of this congregation had the gall to petition the board for more information, then be livid. If you feel duped because at the January vote, we discussed why it was a bad idea to relocate in the middle of a pandemic, and the motion was amended to reflect this, but then we listed and sold in 2021 anyway, then respect those feelings. If you feel bitter because you believe that we would have sold for a much higher price post-pandemic and that property values in the area will boost once that Finlandia renovation is complete, it's okay to feel bitter. If you're sick of being told to trust the board and have faith in the process as if this is a cult where we must follow, then be sick. And if you feel unappreciated because you stepped into a leadership role here when no one else would, and you have been doing the best that you can with whatever limited time, knowledge, and skills you have, only to be faced with criticism, then you have the right to feel unappreciated. If you feel regret because you believe we could have consulted with a neutral third-party professional with experience in project management, risk management, growth management, but now, only now that the deal is done, we're consulting a neutral third party to facilitate our group regathering, then you can feel that regret. If you're frustrated because others haven't been able to see the potential that is out there in other locations, then be frustrated. And if you're frustrated because others haven't been able to see the potential that Algoma has to offer, then be frustrated. If you're angry at me, absolutely angry with me for standing up here and restating many of these feelings that people have shared with me this year, then go ahead and be angry with me. But we're going to sing it out. We are a gentle, angry people. And you'll notice as the lyrics come up that I've changed some of the lyrics to this familiar song so that they reflect some of the feelings that were brought up at last week's service. The words might not fit with the rhythm of the song, but we'll go with it anyways, because we're taking risks. To evolve can take time. We here at LUF are kind of doing the opposite of an evolution. This is a quantum leap, and it might work for us. I'm not much of a science person, but I believe a quantum leap occurs when an electron in one energy level in an atom jumps instantly into another energy rapidly. And as the atom jumps, it will either emit or absorb energy as it does. I hope that we absorb more energy, but I personally feel a loss of energy. When we think of accessibility, we often think of physical accessibilities. Okay. All right, the computer is slower than I'm talking. We think of physical accessibilities, but it's actually much bigger than that. We look at visual impairments, hearing impairments, cognitive disabilities, invisible disabilities, and the list goes on. The need for accommodations is growing all the time. Next one now. I want to draw your attention to the accessibility symbol here with the picture of the brain. This represents people with cognitive disabilities and brain injuries. These are often known as invisible disabilities. And invisible disabilities can also include chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and anxiety. This has not been a good year for those of us with some of these invisible disabilities. My anxiety has never been worse than it has in the past few months. And I don't even experience anxiety as bad and as intently as most people do. I'm not doing well with the uncertainty at all. I spend far too much time ruminating over the horrible feeling that what was once a home for liberal religion and social justice is now going to become high-end luxury apartments. We don't need more luxury rentals. We need more affordable housing, maybe co-housing. We need more community spaces. And I'm stuck with inspiring stories in my mind, like the 519 Community Center and Roncesvalles United. And I am filled with an overwhelming sense of regret. When the church was for sale, I actually received a couple of calls at the office from people with social enterprise ideas that they wanted to launch in the area, but needed an affordable place for their after-school program or their children's music program. I couldn't turn off my brain, and it made me sick. I called up the new owner, who I had met a couple of times when he was looking at the church and I was in the office. I was so desperate to feel better. I actually offered to buy the church back. Maybe I would turn it into a pay what you can community space. It wouldn't make me any money, but when I'm an old lady on my deathbed, am I really going to be wishing that I had more money? Or am I going to be living with regret that I could have done something meaningful, and I didn't. So I offered the owner more than what he had bought it for, and he countered much higher. You wouldn't believe how much his assessment of the value of this property went up over the course of 2 weeks. I was hoping that if I bought the church, it would somehow quiet my anxiety, but it didn't. And even though Chris was trying to be supportive, I know that he was thinking I had lost my mind. It was more risk and more debt than we were comfortable with. And I didn't feel right doing this behind the board and the congregation's back without you all knowing. And it made me so sick, and I backed down. I surrendered to gentrification, and I don't feel any better, but I thought you should know. Some of us might not be able to follow the congregation to the next location, wherever that is, at least not right away. Some of us will be too angry and hurt to help with moving things into storage. But if you're one of the people who voted in favor of selling Algoma, I hope that you can collect boxes and ask the board how you can help, because there is a lot of sorting and packing and scanning and shredding and trips to the dump to happen over the next 4 weeks, and it shouldn't all fall upon the leadership to do that work. Just as businesses have stayed afloat and evolved to meet customer needs, we might also consider evolving to meet the needs of our larger community. What will the future of LUF look like? Will we share space with other congregations? Will we open doors for the larger community? Will we wear our commitments to social justice on our sleeve? Where will our next home be? Where do we go from here? How will we get there? As usual, we have more questions than answers. Perhaps we will find the guidance for the answers that we need. Maybe we need a prayer. I'm not one who is big on prayer, but if there was ever a time to do it, this might be it. Our final hymn is a video, and I'm actually going to invite you to remain seated in silence and listen to the words and read the words. But of course, if you want to sing, I'm not going to stop you. Immediately following the hymn, Heather will play a Chopin Nocturne piano solo. And I know I shared a lot of stories today, but perhaps there is some inspiration in there somewhere that can help direct us in the future. I'd encourage you to take these next 5 minutes to meditate or to reflect on what the future of Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship might look like. And then I'll bring it back and close it up for the day.